Hi, I'm Chris Barker.
And I'm Will Betts, and this is the Music Tech My Forever Studio podcast, brought to you in partnership with Audient, and we are recording this time in TYX Studios, London.
That's right, in this podcast we speak to musicians, DJs, producers and engineers about their fantasy forever studio.
The fantasy studio that our guests dream up today is one that they must live with for eternity. But even in Studio Foreverland, we do have some rules, don't we, Chris?
Yes, that's right, the rules. Our guests get to pick a DAW, a computer and an audio interface. Everybody gets those free. But then they just have six other bits of studio kit and one luxury item.
There is one more rule, though.
Yes.
Bundles.
That's right, no bundles. Anything sold as a package of software or hardware as a single item will not be allowed.
Our guest this time is one of the UK's most in-demand vocal producers, with a string of incredible credits, including Galantis, Little Mix, and David Guetta.
Indeed, and as a gifted vocalist, she's featured on tracks by Rudimental, MK, Martin Solvig, and more, racking up over 500 million streams.
That's right, this is My Forever Studio with Rafaela. Welcome.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Such a nice intro. I was like, oh, let me just cry in the corner.
Incredible list of credits there. I was looking at your Spotify. I mean, holy moly, that's a lot of collaborations you've done.
Yeah, thank you.
Incredible.
I don't know, I've just been doing it since I was at uni. And then sometimes I don't know, someone says something, I'm like, oh yeah, I did do that. And I'm like, oh, cool. I just plug away.
What was the first point where you were like, oh, that's a huge name, you know, somebody that I looked up to and I'm working with them? Or
well, okay, so the first ever session I had with Rudimental, I remember growing up, like, listening to their music and stuff, and I had, like, a couple of weeks beforehand, maybe embarrassingly, I'd done a cover of their song, Bloodstream, with Ed Sheeran, and so I'd done a cover of it, and then I was like, found myself in the studio with them, and I was like, awkward. And I mean, like, he was just like, oh yeah, I saw your cover, it was really great. And I was like, oh cool. And then I just had to kind of like, yeah, and I think at that moment I was like, actually, do you know what, that's quite cool.
Was it the cover that led them to you, or was it a coincidence?
No, I think that I'm signed to Phrase Differently for publishing. And I kind of think, like, the more you sort of work with people, you kind of just get introduced. And Hitton, my publisher, he introduced me, and my dad actually was managing me at the time, to Greg Burnell, who was their manager at the time. We had a really cool meeting, and I just, like, was playing songs and stuff, and he set up a session for us. And yeah, I think the cool thing about sessions is that it doesn't really matter, like, who you are, like, what you've had in the chart. You're literally just people in a room making music and hoping that it will be magic. So yeah,
which is the best place to be, right?
That's how
everybody, well, a lot of people find their happy place.
Yeah,
even originally, like, you know, I think we all remember times in studios with friends or in bands with friends, and when it becomes that again, it must be really nice. Where you just
it's really nice. It's just like I always say there's like a magic in the studio, because the doors close, there's no A&R, there's no manager. We love them.
Yeah,
they're great, but it's just so nice because it's literally just
great leveler just, for everybody as well.
It's so nice, and there's just magic that I think it's like about 3 o'clock in the afternoon generally. Like, you know, you've got generally you'll have verse, pre-chorus, and chorus by that point, and you kind of just can relax and just be like, this is cool, and you just are listening to it, and you're like, this didn't exist this morning.
Yeah,
which is really nice. Yeah,
plucked it out of the sky.
Yeah.
So before we start building this Forever Studio, and we'll get to like location and stuff at the start, tell us a bit more about that route into music, basically, like, from, I guess, were you being a singer initially, or were you playing instruments?
I like started classically. So I was classically trained. I was six when I started like violin. I was a really uncool kid. I was in orchestras.
Yes.
I was like, rock on. Yeah. I literally was that extracurricular kid, and I was like in orchestras like on Saturday mornings and stuff. So I first of all started learning violin and then piano like a year later. So I kind of learned how to read music around the same time as I was learning to read.
Wow.
And so it was just sort of like, I loved it. And my granddad, he just was obsessed with records, and he would always have he had the most insane record collection. He was very precious about his system. And he was like, no one can touch it. Only I can set it up, use it. And so I grew up around that. My great auntie, she was a concert violinist.
Wow.
So yeah, I started classically, which is great. But I've always wanted to create. And I'd get really frustrated because like my music teachers would basically be like, you're not playing it exactly how like Mozart wrote it. And I'm like, that's because it needs something else. I'm like, well, I mean, not to say anything against Mozart, but like, you know, in your your heart, you're like, I just want to express. Yeah. And that it'd be so specific, even down to kind of like the dynamics, it would be written exactly how you need to play it. So it didn't allow for much expression other than what was actually written. And you'd be penalized for not actually, you know, crescendoing when you needed to, and if it was mezzo forte instead of like forte, fortissimo, you know, I just
wanted... How much leeway is there in music?
Well, I mean, in classical music, I mean,
there's got to be holes between that, that language.
But no, of course, there's expression. But I think growing up as a 12-year-old and your teacher being like, no, you didn't play it exactly how it's meant to, it didn't feel like there was much room to create. And I love to improvise. And then I went to performing arts school, Pineapple Performing Arts, when I was like, I think I was 13, 14. There was this amazing gospel teacher called Daniel Thomas. And he basically just introduced me to the concept of improvising. And we were all in a circle and he was playing chords and he just turns to me and he was like, sing. And I was like, sing what? Like, because I was used to reading music and not, you know,
improvising. Had you sung much at this point?
Say again.
Had you sung much? You went to
sing? Oh, yeah, no, I was always singing. Yeah, I was very annoying.
That came side by side with the violin.
I was always singing. I was like obsessed with Sesame Streets and I was singing good theme tune and my parents were like, shut up.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, one of the greatest songs ever written.
I mean, hands down.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then I kind of like got into the gospel choir at that performing arts school and he was like, sing. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, just sing what's in your heart, what you hear. And I was like, I just did it. I just improvised. I was like, whoa, this is magic. That kind of opened up my brain to like
somebody
start
allowing
writing.
You to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And then I wrote like my first song and I was like just playing around and stuff. And my parents gave me a Tascam 4-track recorder, I think around the same time. Classic. And so I just started playing with like layering up piano lines and like chords and then like a melody line over the top and then like different BV lines and stuff. And then I was like, this
what a
is...
gift. That's great.
It was amazing. And then I found out that there was this thing called Logic when I was 16. That blew my mind all over again. Because I was like, whoa, you can have like 200 tracks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What was that like for you? Because I know that some people find that not having to reduce down the ideas and like bounce down or have a 4-track limits
was too
you.
Yeah it
Option
did
paralysis.
Was that too limited
yeah.
It was too limited because in my head when I was writing wasn't even thinking it as production. No one told me what I was doing was producing. I was like, obviously there needs to be a bass and I'm hearing like a string line because I was in orchestras, so I would hear string parts and stuff and then there could be, I don't know, like a synth or a weird sound here, and so in my head I was like, when I first found out about Logic, one of my friends Knight. He now goes by the name Jungle Boy. Shout out. I was just watching him and he just like laid it up. Like it was more just the freedom that like anything in your head, if you wanted a drum, you could program a drum because there was a plugin that had a drum and you had a keyboard, but you could go poof and you got a kick. Poof, you got a tom. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. And you could just layer and layer and layer. And then it wasn't just that, it was what you could do with that. Then there's like reverbs and there's delays and then there's like chorus effect. There's all these effects. So yeah, I think it was never going to be enough.
It's good that you found it exciting though, because like you say, sometimes that world can sort of change the way you make music in a bad way, because it's like the limitation was kind of the nice thing. But
I think that's the thing that some people talk about, is saying, you know, they missed their 4-tracks because you had to really think about what you were doing with it rather than going, oh, well, I'll figure that out later and just keep adding things.
No, I weirdly don't miss it. Categorically, no. No, I think it's great because it does make you think, but I love the freedom of being able to kind of like just, have everything at your fingertips, basically.
Okay, so let's move on to the first part of the studio build, which is location. Where would you have your studio if you could have it anywhere in the world? What would it look like?
I was thinking about this and it's really difficult. I think what would be amazing, so I'm half Persian and I can't go to Iran for many reasons. And I think I'm actually from Esfahan, which is a beautiful place, and I've only been when I was a baby. I've just seen pictures. I know my soul was there, my body was there, but I don't remember. And I think a studio in Esfahan, in a free Esfahan, would be amazing, because it's actually illegal for a woman to sing in public in Iran. So I feel like that would be, for so many reasons, amazing. Plus the actual landscape is incredible. It's so beautiful. It's so green and lush, and there's parks everywhere. And so for me, like, to feel like you can walk out and there's just like nature around you as well is really inspiring. Instead of, like, currently my studio, which I love, is in a basement. so I think like
a bit of a change from that.
Yeah, exactly.
And what kind of, is there a specific building in mind or style of like architecture there? Or
So there's like basically a square in Esfahan, which is like really famous. Mm. I think there, that would be amazing.
Looking out onto the square.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I'm looking at some of the architecture here. Mm-hmm. Incredible. This blue mosque.
Yes.
Looks like. Mm-hmm. Just astonishing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's so inspiring. So you kind of like can, in my head, I get inspired by what I see. Mm. My studio at the moment is in Shoreditch, and just walking around, you see like graffiti and mm-hmm. art and stuff, and it's gritty, and it gives you, I think it really affects what kind of music you make.
I mean, I think that's well known where people are. You know, you get a lot of the sort of techno comes out of quite industrial kind of places, Detroit and Sheffield with electronic music, and Berlin. Obviously.
Yeah.
You very rarely get that kind of sound out of a beautiful sunny beach type location.
Dorset.
Dorset techno.
Yeah, there's a reason. But like surf music, right? Yeah. Feels like it comes from the beach.
Yeah, that's
true. I don't know why.
Yeah, there's just there's a DNA in it, isn't there?
You can't help but be affected by your surroundings.
Yeah,
so how do you think it would affect your music? Mm.
I think that I've always had a little, I call them snaky melodies, which is a bit of like kind of, without even trying, a little bit of spice mm-hmm. added to melodies that is kind of has my heritage kind of woven into it. Mm. So I think probably more of that, I think. And then mixed, I don't know what it is, but because it's such an old city and there's so much history, I think maybe more analog kind of, a more analog approach would be quite cool.
So what are you going to do in this? Oh, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. Okay.
So we've locked in the location.
Inside the studio then, what's the vibe that you like to have?
So first off, and I have one in my current studio.
Wait, we're not talking about equipment yet.
Oh, no, this is not. Okay. This is not equipment.
Okay.
Bear with me.
Sorry.
Is a Persian carpet.
Okay. Yeah.
10 out of 10. So I think just to create the vibe, to create the atmosphere, I feel like there's something really, I love cozy studios when you go in and you just kind of feel like you can relax. And also there's like freedom to create. So I think immediately a Persian carpet.
Shoes off.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Well, in Farsi, in Iranian households, we have these things called dampai, which is basically like guest kind of like
house shoes.
Yeah,
house
slippers. There's always like a line of dampai of kind of varying different sizes. It's quite funny. So quite Swedish, actually.
Yeah.
In Swedish, like studios, they do that.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Huh. People like leave their shoes outside the studio.
Who's got the best selection of shoes that you've seen studio wise?
Oh no, they don't have other shoes. They don't have dampai.
Oh, okay.
To be fair. But they take their shoes off before going
Fine.
To studio.
So it's a sock situation.
It's a sock situation.
Socks.
Yeah.
Studio
what
socks.
What are they doing? Yeah. Nightmare.
Yeah, so I think a Persian carpet and then a samovar to get tea on the go.
Okay.
For vibe.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. With an espresso machine in the corner for extra caffeine.
So a good sort of kitchen situation.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But again, a homely vibe, a welcoming homely vibe. It's not too business-like. It's not too...
A nice comfy sofa. I think we need some nice mood lighting.
Okay.
Some fairy lights.
Windows? No windows?
Of course, windows. Okay. But like in the old traditional, I don't know if you've seen in like the square, the sort of like arch. I don't know how to explain it.
I think they had them on there. I don't know if they were the same on that mosque.
Yeah, like sort of pointed arches.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So like that, basically. I think it'd be really cool.
Looking out over the square.
Yeah. Oh, with some indoor plants too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a great vibe.
It feels
like, it feels like a creative space.
Yeah, I think so.
And then let's move on to the three free items, which is your computer, your DAW, and your audio interface. What are we selecting for these three?
Okay, so we're going to go for what I've actually just got, which is a new MacBook Pro with the It's like M3 Max.
Okay, M3, ooh, yeah.
Nice.
I know, it's just like power.
Hot off the press.
I like the power. Because it's portable.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also kind of like quite powerful, so you can do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Door, I'm going to create fights here, but I'm logic pro until the day I die.
No fights.
No fights here.
Okay.
No.
Specific one. But it's rare that people, a lot of people have like a little battle there between two. You know, yeah. That some people use multi-doors.
Well, the thing is, I use Ableton as well, which is really good fun. But I think if I was going to do one forever.
I mean, you could still get Ableton in your six items, but park that.
Yeah.
But you're thinking for your free door.
I think for my free door, Logic, it's my first language.
Yeah.
And I'm really, I love doing vocals in Logic. Yes, yeah, it's also really creative instruments.
The vocal comping tools, actually, in Logic. Oh, yeah,
fantastical.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And then.
Because you can do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not a Logic guy, but you can do that thing where you kind of mute.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of moves between tracks as you highlight bits.
Quick swipe editing.
Exactly.
I knew there was a phrase for it, but yeah, that's very cool.
And the marquee tool is literally just, it's my bro. And so I'm just like bam, bam, bam.
I mean, that's
not your secondary tool, is it? That your primary tool, marquee?
No, it's my secondary tool.
Okay.
I'm not a heathen. Yeah. I mean, radical.
It's a thing that a lot of people that record vocals forget, though, just how much editing and comping goes into it.
So much.
A single vocal take.
Yeah.
I mean, what would your advice be for people that are getting vocals and think it's not sounding right?
Just practice. An experiment, because
afraid to read it, right? That's like
and I started just teaching myself. Like I went on to do a music degree and there was music production within that, but I'd already kind of like experimented for hours and hours and hours, just saying like, oh, what does this do, and if I crossfade like this, what does that do? And just trust your ears, just follow your ears. And also YouTube is brilliant.
Yeah,
if ever you're just like, I don't understand why this isn't, for example, like crossfading in the way I want it to, or like, why is there this or that? It's great. You get like the University of YouTube is fabulous.
What about the performance aspect? Like, how?
Yeah.
I'm not a vocalist by any means, so I don't know, and I've not done vocal editing. So, but how small will you go for an edit or a re-record? Will you go a word or a phrase?
Yeah, you
or
can
a
go
syllable?
To a syllable.
Yeah.
You can even go to an end of like, if for example something has
the wrong vibrato at the end, or
even for example like an S is too quiet at the end. To edit that, to kind of bring it up so it kind of has the same presence as the rest. Or if you prefer like a plosive of something else, that I could comp to a P, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I was interested, because I think some people hearing this, if they're not too far on in their music production career, will be surprised.
There's also nothing wrong with it. It doesn't mean you've done a bad take.
That's
the other thing.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of times people are like, oh, it has to be done in one take. And you don't, that's absolutely not true.
And nothing on the radio is.
No, nothing. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think part of it is sort of like, for me, I'm weird because I actually love comping. It's one of my favourite things.
Wow.
Weird. I'm like, oh, let's get stuck into this comp. And I kind of think that there's actually, it's almost like an instrument with itself, within itself, because those choices you make completely change the performance and completely change the actual identity of the song. Yeah. And I think that it's a certain skill within itself that you shouldn't feel bad that you're having to do. It's not that you're having to do it. Mm. It's that it actually helps the actual performance by doing it.
Helps the song. And that's I think what I was trying to get at is like, that's the amount of time and effort it takes down to those.
Down to the syllable, to the. Mm-hmm.
To make a professional sounding pop vocal.
Precisely, And sometimes the tone, like for me, tone and emotion is the most important. Timing can be fixed. Tune can be fixed. Even vibrato can be fixed. If something has, there's just, when you listen to it, it has an energy or it hits in a way that makes you feel something. That's the most important part. And then if, for example, you're like, okay, it has a tiny bit too much like vibrato at the end, you can edit that down. You go,
what, just a Melodyne or something?
Yeah. And you just make that kind of vibrato just less, basically smaller. So the parameters of that just more chill. And then it does, so you've kept the essence of that take.
Mm.
And there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that.
And in terms of vocal recording and vocal production, then maybe you can speak to how much work goes into the layering as well. Because I think,
yes,
certainly I, when I was working with vocalists, mm-hmm. you get to a point where maybe the sound isn't quite as you mm-hmm. want it to be, and you've got doubles or whatever, and it's still not quite there. How many layers do you go with when you're for a polished production?
I think it all depends on the song, and it depends on what kind of like sound you're going for. There's certain songs that literally need one incredible lead, and it speaks for itself, and maybe a couple of doubles. But then there's other... I think if you're trying to make it sound good with doubles through layers, then I would go back to the lead and say, what's going wrong with the lead?
Got it.
That's what I would do. I think you don't... I wouldn't rely on making it sound good with billions of layers. Because
like
the layers...
Fixing it in the mix.
Exactly. The layers should be there, to me anyway, and this is how I like to work, to kind of complement the overall sound. And they add sort of colour to what you've already got.
Rather than icing a badly made cake.
Nailed
it.
don't slice it.
Only look at it from this angle. But if you've got loads of layers and it's still not feeling right, then there's something, and often this happens, you know, and I'll have to go back and I'll be like, okay, something isn't feeling right. It's something to do with the lead, and there's an energy, and there's a there's a tone that isn't quite right, that isn't working. So often I will actually mute the lead and keep the BV. I'll solo all the BVs with the track. Does that feel good? Does that feel like something can go over it and feel right? If so, then I just, with like fresh ears and vim and vigor, we'll re-record kind of. And what I do often also is if there's a certain section that's not feeling right, often I used to record in sections quite a lot. I'd be like, right, let's do verse, let's do pre, let's do chorus, let's do verse, let's do pre. And that can create quite a disjointed performance. So often what I do is I will, you know, if we start like that, cool. But then actually once all the BVs are done, I will go from the top and be like, right, let's do a whole take from beginning to end. And actually that's how I record a lot of my vocals myself that I'm on. I'll do it from beginning to end because I know performance-wise, what does it need? Does it need more vocal fry? Does it need more of a push? Does it need a little bit of a variation of a melody? Does it need like, and each section going from like a verse to a pre to a chorus feels like a story because that's how the listener's listening to it. Yeah. They're not listening to it on loop for like the for eight bars.
for eight hours.
And exactly. And all those sections need to make sense. So that's what I kind of do, or at least go from like a halfway through the pre-chorus and then go into the chorus because then you know kind of like what it needs.
It's like another food analogy, but like when chefs or people developing food, they just have one taste and they're not finishing the whole dish. And I always think that sometimes you go to restaurants and something's too rich or too salty.
Yeah,
and it's like
that's true.
One bite isn't the whole story of the whole thing. And it's
or
kind
like
of
like writing a book, but basically writing it in chapters, but
one chapter a year,
or even going from like chapter six, back to chapter 24. It's that kind of feeling. Yeah. It can create that kind of feeling.
Yeah, and I suppose actually that's one of the dangers with technology of having this ability to record non-linear. And the amount of editing that you can do is that you can get. Individually, all these things are perfect, and together as a whole, it's kind of it doesn't make sense.
It can feel like it's then disjointed. Yeah. So then I always try to just go and do it from the beginning to end, because then you'll have a little bit of magic in between each part, and maybe a little ad lib that just rises up into something that was felt in the moment, and it's magic, and you can't create that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
When you're the featured artist on a track, are you delivering your own vocals that you've produced, or how does that?
Yeah.
Okay, right. That process is you're doing all of that production
that's mostly the case with like most of the things I've been on. And I kind of, because for me, the sound of my vocal and the way I process it is quite individual to my voice as well. I can always hear, I can tell when I haven't done it, if that makes sense. And I kind of feel like because I produce as well, it's kind of quite an important part of my identity as an artist, is the way my vocals process. I'm quite like, I'm really weird. Like if I'm working with someone and they're recording me, I'll be like, I'm really sorry to be like super weird about this, but I have my exact settings that I like to have on each plugin.
I think a lot of artists do that now as well,
And I have my vocal chain and stuff that I like, so
Ariana Grande does all that as well, all her own vocal
and
stuff.
I mean, Kylie as well, meant to be an incredible vocal producer
as well. Yeah. Because your comp, there's if you think about it, it's kind of like editing. It's like a photographer will take 100 photos.
Yeah.
And the editing process is actually super important.
Mm.
And it's the same kind of thing, because you can create an entire like identity from a comp.
Yeah.
And it sounds so weird, but like sometimes I don't like something that's too, like an eye that's too bright. Because I'm like, no, it's not cool enough. And it'll be like, I. It's tiny little things like
that
someone, if you don't know, be like, oh, that sounds cool.
But then you know your own voice better than anyone, right?
Yeah.
And because you've listened to it so much.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know there's that thing with people when they hear their own voice back for the first time, I go, good Lord. I don't sound like that.
I feel like that with my speaking voice. I'm kind of like,
really?
I'm deadened to my own singing voice now. I've become so, not that I'm critical, but I kind of am past that. I'm like, I just see it for what it is, and I can.
Can you treat it like another person when you're editing it almost?
Yeah. But I can't listen back to myself when I was younger. I absolutely can't do that. It's really weird. I feel like my voice has kind of dropped. And before, when I was younger, it was much higher.
Mm.
I had a weird American accent. I don't know what I was doing
there. I was just going to say, it's kind of a trait of being younger, though. Sometimes you're trying to be somebody else.
Something else, exactly. Yeah. And actually, I think it probably happens to, I'm sure it happens to men as well, but for women, our voices drop.
About 13, I think it was for me.
Chris.
But yeah, so like my voice has literally dropped.
I didn't know whether to say that or not. Say it.
It's landed well.
Yeah, okay.
Your voice obviously develops over time.
It changes. Yeah. So my voice has dropped. Now I can reach down to like a C below middle C.
Hmm.
Before I was like an F below middle C. I was like, it's so low.
And there's like confidence and being comfortable with yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we're on audio interface now. Mm. That's the last of the three free items.
Definitely Universal Audio. Do you know what? Let's go simple. Because of what's coming up,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go for an Apollo Twin.
Nice. Okay.
Yes.
Easy.
Because it's portable.
So you've got the laptop, you're going for the portable angle here. But,
yes.
Okay.
You can sling all that in a bag. No
exactly.
problem. Go, go and work in another studio.
Exactly. Travel, we can go outside. Even like, I love that because you can just literally take it anywhere and just sit. I there was one time, like my dad has a Persian carpet. It's random. Persian carpet shop in Stockbridge in Hampshire.
That's where we get the carpet from, right?
Indeed. Yeah. Of course, always.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes... for free, actually.
I hope it's free.
Can you imagine? Yeah, and like sometimes I just go down to the country like at the weekend just to get like a different perspective. And I just take my portable gear and I just kind of sit and I just write and produce. Yeah. And it gives me like a nice little change of scenery.
That must actually blow people's minds that, you know, what... worked in studios in the 70s and like, you know, that
yeah, can you
like
imagine?
That. Yeah. I mean, do you record in the carpet shop?
Yes,
that
I
must
did.
Have yeah, incredibly dead acoustic.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it's great. And then also I kind of
nobody can hear you scream in the carpet shop. Terrifying.
Yeah, it is terrifying, yeah. The way you said it, yeah.
Ever since I was 13.
Oh my gosh. It's nice. It's chill because I used to, when we were little, my dad used to play this game and like he'd be like, oh, we would go with him to kind of client meetings and stuff sometimes, and he'd just like leave us in the warehouse and he's I remember he said to me when I was like, I must have been like six, he's like, if you sit in the middle of the carpet and you press the button in the middle, it's not a button, it's just a medallion of the design, and you wish hard enough, you'll be able to fly on the carpet. So me, having watched Aladdin, I was like, oh my God, I could be Jasmine, Princess Jasmine. It's like the only Disney character I related to.
Yeah.
So I was like, I could be Jasmine. So I would sit there and I'd be like, oh, I'm not flying. It's not working hard enough. Mm-hmm. It was not working. My dad would be like, it's because we're not wishing hard enough. So I was occupied for an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
So easily kind of tricked.
Like, yeah, literally, I know. I was young. Yeah.
One day he came back, you were gone. Joke's on you.
yeah, exactly. And I'm like singing a whole new world. So it's always, it kind of always feels kind of like homely to me.
Mm.
I've often just sat on a carpet and it's just like, it just feels like a vibe. It's quite like nice and gives when you relax your mind, your brain is open to new ideas.
Yeah. And it makes sense to have it there.
Mm. Yeah.
I guess we should move on to the actual six items then.
Let's do it.
Item number one.
This is so hard. I have to be honest, I still haven't decided entirely. I'm going to decide as we go.
That's fine.
That's how we roll.
Sadistic, actually. I don't know who came up with this. It's just not possible.
Who knows?
Scholars maintain.
Right, okay. I have a list.
Mm.
Okay, so what we're going to start with, we're going to have to obviously start with a microphone.
Mm.
Number one. So there is a dream microphone that I would like to lovingly steal from someone's studio.
Oh yeah, we love this.
Which is Egg White's U47 Neumann. Because I basically recorded with this when I was like, I think I was 22, and I was working with this producer called Blair McKeegan. And he was borrowing it from Egg White. And he was like, literally Chasing Pavements has been recorded on this. Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
And I was staring at this mic and I was like, I was 22 and I was like, it's one of my first sessions. I'm quite a believer that particularly like analog gear or just gear that has a history has a magic to it.
So
I feel like it does retain some of the magic. Aside from it being a beautiful microphone, I personally have U87, which is great. But I feel like it just has a real warmth. And I think for the history of it, I'm going with that microphone.
That's a great choice. It was also used to record Lewis Capaldi's Someone You Loved.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Say less.
Okay.
No, I'm joking.
No, that's great. It's great.
Yeah,
great choice.
I think it would be great just to have that. I feel like it has a soul.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's so important, isn't it, to be surrounded by things that you feel like are going to inspire you to produce your best performance.
Yeah, exactly. I think so. And I think just in general, like Neumann microphones have got such a beautiful warmth about them.
Mm.
They're kind of like my choice.
It's sort of the sound of a lot of pop music as well. It's a bit like the SSL effect.
It is, yeah.
It kind of becomes self-fulfilling. Like they use this because it sounds like this.
But no, but I actually think...
In
like,
a great way.
I think if you're like team... I think there's two people, Team Manly or Team Neumann. I think Manlys are beautiful. Mm. They really are. But for my voice specifically, I think they can sound a little bit too polished and too pop.
Okay.
There's kind of like a warmth and kind of a not if I say a grit, that's not necessarily correct, but like there's a colour to a Neumann that I really love.
Mm.
So yeah.
And so is it just that one time you used it then?
Yes, just that one time.
And the way your vocal came out, were you just like,
It was beautiful. It was so gorgeous. And I think...
So is that why you ended up purchasing? So you got an 87. This is a 47?
Yes.
It's a 47.
Oh, okay,
yes.
The 47.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
the hallowed 47.
It is hallowed, yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed. But that specific one.
Yeah.
You could go and buy one off. But, yeah.
But is that why you went for to stay with Neumann? Or did you already have a...
No, that is why I stayed with Neumann. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, because I use a lot of different microphones in studios and stuff. And I kind of, you kind of just by recording every day, you kind of get to know different gear.
Mm.
And yeah, that's why.
So are there any other mics that you've used where you've been like, this is a like an affordable, but also close second or close, you know, top five?
Sontronics is an incredible company. And I had an Aria. I still have the Aria and it's beautiful. It's a really great, it's a gorgeous tube mic. It's a valve mic and it's just really, really warm and lovely. And I still have that and I still use that as well. And a lot of my vocals that you hear on the radio, on Spotify, are recorded with that.
You struggled to say that.
I was like, weird. I'm like,
500 million streams. Exceptional.
It's incredible,
throw myself in the corner and die.
But no, that's great. So a lot of the stuff that people will hear on those over 500 million streams will be the Sontronics mic.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And they're just such a lovely team as well. Really, really lovely.
What about for performance then?
For performance...
Is that going to be one of your six, or are you not?
No, okay. It's not going to be one of my six.
I'm kind of intrigued. What,
no, I think obviously the Shure SM7B is great. I think that's it's an incredible mic.
Yeah. it's these ones that we're on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like,
if anybody's listening or watching,
which is brilliant.
Yeah. With the cloud lifters, I think. Yep.
Yeah. Nice. And it's, you can just like literally throw it around and take it abroad everywhere and it sounds great. And you can kind of, Toby Scott, shout out to Toby Scott. I was always of the mind that if you're going to be recording like finished vocals, it needs to be a condenser microphone. That's the school of thought that I've been brought up on.
Yeah.
And I was quite a purist. And he was just like, I went down to his studio in Brighton. He handed me the SM. And I was like, nope. He was like, trust me. I was like, and then I said, cool. So I recorded like the whole day through it. And the man, it's just, he made magic with this mic. And I know, obviously, it's so flat and so brilliant and so clear. So I think for a dynamic microphone, I think it's wonderful. I think this is the choice. And he completely convinced me. And I was like, cool. I think it was like the next day. I was like, fine, I'm going to go buy it. Damn it.
Was it handheld when you were using
yes,
it?
Yeah.
How much of that do you think was part of why it worked for you?
Oh, I think it's completely different way of kind of approaching recording. And I was like, I think with a kind of handheld mic, you can just sit on a sofa. I was actually just sitting down. And it kind of has a feeling of like, obviously when you're holding something, it feels more like a performance.
Yeah. So that can come out of your voice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It feels more of a performance. And also, weirdly, if you're recording every day as a recording artist, like you kind of get used to the concept of standing and it feeling official and it feeling like this is the final vocal. And there's something like mental that goes on there that's sort of like whether you want to call it like, you know, you have like red light syndrome where you're just like, oh, it's recording. there's kind of an approach to it, whereas I feel whenever I'm holding the SM, I'm just more relaxed in a weird
You'd
way.
See it with rappers where especially the starts of their careers where they were used to winning rap battles or performing or that kind of, or, you know, recording at home like this. Then they get to a studio and it's like, I don't really know.
Yeah, like,
what do you do with your hands?
So you
would sort of give them a mic.
Yeah.
And as long as it doesn't, you know, to sort of just as a prop to get them to perform rather than do that strange thing.
I feel also it's a brilliant way of like, the way I write often is just by freestyling. So I just put myself and record. And then there won't be necessarily specific lyrics, but there'll be words and maybe turns of phrases that come out, and there's just a freedom that you have when you do that, and when you're then holding a mic that in your head you're like, this doesn't feel final and forever. And often then you get magic because you're not thinking about it, just kind of like flows out.
Yeah,
that's such a great tip as well for people recording.
Love
that.
The Music Tech My Forever Studio podcast is supported by Audient, makers of the ID range of audio interfaces.
Yes, building on Audient's 25 years of design heritage, the ID range spans from the portable ID4 to the more feature-packed ID14 and 24 interfaces, all the way up to Audient's powerhouse desktop interface, the ID44.
You can expect rugged build quality and exceptional audio performance across the entire range, with every ID interface using the same award-winning console mic preamps found in their renowned recording console, the ASP8024HE.
The ID24 is the latest addition to the range, featuring two of those console mic preamps, along with balanced inserts, a JFET instrument input, ADAC expandability, and customizable monitor control, making the ID24 and its larger sibling, the ID44, perfect for using with outboard equipment and tracking instruments and vocals.
That's right, and the Audient ID24 is available now, priced at £299, €349, and $399.
Visit audient.com for more information and to explore the full ID interface range. Item number two.
Okay. Dun, 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 dun. Right, we're going to stick for vocals for now. So I think if I am in my dream studio to get a good vocal setup, numero uno. So we're going to go for the TubeTech CL1B as a compressor.
Okay. That's not a common choice on this podcast.
Is it not?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which we like. It's like
it's
nice.
Great.
Okay, that's good. I was thinking, oh God, I'm going to be so 101 here. I think it's just such a beautiful compressor. And it's what we used on the Little Mix album, Metropolis. That's actually when I first kind of got familiar with it. Mm. And I was like, whoa, what is this magic item? It's a blue box. Holds so much.
Like a remake of something else based on, or it's its own thing, right?
I'm quite sure it's its own thing, but don't quote me on that.
No, I think it is its own thing.
Misinformation.
I was sure it was, but it's because it has that look. I was thinking, is this trying to imitate something else from like the 50s or whatever? But I don't think it is.
I don't think so, but I might be wrong.
No, it seems to be its own.
The TubeTech?
Thing. The TubeTech, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, you can do it in the box, and you definitely can. Mm-hmm. 100% you can.
Sure.
But I feel like when I kind of was working with raw vocals, completely dry, that had gone through that, I was like, sold to the Persian lady.
so that's going in on the vocal chain.
Yes.
And that's going in.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's okay, so you're committing that. That's not something after the fact.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, really beautiful. It adds such a lovely colour. And I haven't got stuck in with it yet, but I've literally just bought my own. So I have a UAD 6176. Mm-hmm. That's brilliant because it's kind of like a limiter. As well as a preamp, you can split. So it's like two for the price of one, I was thinking about that. I was like, that would be cheating because then, cheating,
you
it would
can
be smart.
No,
that's a great
hack. It would be smart because
it's
like two
smart.
For the price of one. Yeah. But actually, I was like, you know what?
Gets around our bundle rule.
It really does, yeah.
So maybe the smarter choice probably would have been that. But I love the Tube Tech. I just think it's so beautiful. The colour it brings is just like lovely. It's like crunchy.
But at the moment, you're using the pre's on the UA.
Yes, yeah, I'm going through, yeah, exactly. I'm splitting it. So I'm going through, I'm using the preamp and then using the Tube Tech as a compressor.
Got it. And when you're tracking with the Tube Tech, how much compression do you like to track with? Because I know that some people can feel like you're limiting yourself.
Yeah, not too much, obviously, because you don't want to like just be like, that's it, full stop.
What is too much, though, on tracking, to your mind?
I don't know. I just think, I kind of think like a bit of, so it feels like it's kind of a transient, just it's there, you can feel the colour, but it's not kind of too slammed. So yeah, I kind of feel like that's the nice, I have my my settings on my 6176, I'm just like, bam. I take a picture because I'm like, just in case, because you kind of like play around with stuff. And I was like, you know, if it gets moved around, I'm like, I'm going to have to do this all over again.
You see studios like that though, where they have pre's and things where they're marked.
Oh yeah,
like,
this
yeah,
light
exactly.
goes into that.
Yeah, and, actually, yeah. I have my settings for my 6176. I can let you know if you like.
I mean, look,
if
let's
you'd be
do
interested,
it. Let's do it. With it being an optical compressor, having like fast attacks, how important is that? Is that part of the coloration?
I love
do you
a
think?
Fast attack personally. So yeah, I think it is. I love the fact that you can really play around with it, and it's not like kind of. There's so many parameters that you can play with. I personally like a fast attack, but not too much kind of like, not too slammed ratio.
Do you think just trying to sort of level out the,
yes, exactly.
the performance?
Okay, yes, I precisely. See, yeah. And it just adds a colour that you can kind of tell.
So with your new, with the tube, now you've got one.
Yes.
Do you think it'll be similar where you'll find
I think so,
a point and then just leave it and
exactly.
that'll be your settings? Yeah.
That's kind of like what I like to do. Obviously, it depends on what kind of voice. If you've got a male voice coming in, it might be different or a kind of more...
But for you, you'll have
me,
your setting.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm like, that's great. Yeah. Done. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we're not going to like glue it or anything. We're not going to like stick it in epoxy and then be like, you're done. That doesn't change. That's just how it sounds now.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
So item number three.
Okay. So I think we're going to move away. We're going to go for instruments. I think a Prophet 6.
Good choice.
Which I have and I love. It's like, I always joke and say it's my firstborn. I don't have any children, but if I, when I do, it'll still be my firstborn.
So
I'll never be as good as that kid.
I'll never be as good.
My whole life, God. I was trying to live up to that.
Yeah, literally.
Just didn't have enough teeth.
Yeah, I
know. Nice. Oh, yeah, exactly.
What is it about that then?
So I'm an artist for Sequential, so shout out Sequential. And they were like really, really lovely. And I think like I got to know kind of Prophets through different studios that I've been in. There is a warmth about that synth that I could literally live in for my whole life and be happy. And it's just so versatile. Like the fact that you can... I think like the first year I got it, I just basically spent hours just creating different kind of like banks and banks of my own sounds.
Oh, amazing.
And just like playing with it. And I think it's so versatile because you can have a really beautiful warm synth. You can create a sub bass. You can create all kinds of like different basses. You can create percussion. You can create so many different kind of sounds. Different like, I love playing with it. With sort of like playing, I go through, I'm not allowed to do this because this is not one of my sort of like, it's not one of my instruments/plugins, but I kind of go, I put it through kind of like Microshift or different amp, like guitar pedals even, to create cool different like effects and colors and stuff. And I just love mixing it with actual like in the box plugins. So yeah, I think it's just really versatile. I kind of use, Arturia has some great ones. And then I kind of like, I basically just open up Sound Toys.
Yeah. Good shout.
And just basically create loads of random sounds. And then Guitar Rig as well is great, playing with stuff. And then I have a couple of like different, different things I like to play around with.
So what's the goal? Is it to try and make it sound a little less like it's just
going straight
into your computer?
Yes.
Like air or something?
What, yeah. Is that the vibe? Kind of like, so some of them I kind of like to... If something is like really clean, I like to kind of make it sound more colourful. And it's really hard without my computer, so kind of like show you what I would do to like explain. I just kind of like widen it, kind of go through sort of like a guitar pedal that makes it kind of feel like there's more distortion, there's more colour, and mash it up and then kind of like play with the way it kind of... feels.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm making any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly. So I love...
So a mixture between actual, like, physical pedals or just... rig and stuff.
I think mostly in the box.
In the box, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, would you not prefer a Prophet 10?
I'm going to stick with my Prophet 6.
Fair play. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to upsell you off your firstborn, so I guess that's probably a losing battle.
I have a soft
battle.
Spot for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We'll upsell some dreams soon, Will.
We will.
Get to press that button. Okay. Yeah.
And I also, kind of like as a bit of a hack, because obviously there's lots of sort of like effects within it.
Mm.
So then you can forego having to need to have any delays or any choruses or any verbs. Well,
you'll have that stuff in Logic, don't forget.
That's true. That is true. That's a good point.
So is there an audio input on the Prophet 6? So you could just use the delay and reverb on the Prophet?
Oh, no, sorry. I meant as in have to put it onto the actual...
I see. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. So okay.
Item number four.
Okay,
it's item closing number four. In now. I'm getting stressed.
Dun, 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 dun,
halfway through.
Okay. So I'm going to go for a Steinway grand piano.
Okay.
Solid choice.
Solid. Popular choice.
Yeah, I'm sure lots of people have said that. But you just can't go wrong. And I'm glad, because I kind of started in the classical world. I feel like there's something that if you literally just have a Steinway grand and yourself, magic can still be made.
Well, that's the pull quote. So,
but also I kind of like the fact that I love Hans Zimmer as well.
Mm.
And I love the way he takes kind of like very... If I say human-made instruments, I mean made from wood, do you know what I mean? Like actually made from materials that we have in the world.
Acoustic instruments.
Instruments, that's the word, yeah.
Well, like like the flute that he had made for the Dune 2 soundtrack, which was a contrabass duduk.
Oh, how cool is that?
And it's just this sort of whispery, airy sound. So
that's
yeah,
cool.
Exactly.
It's okay,
wooden,
I didn't know.
Flute, yeah.
I watched his. There was like this video on YouTube of him basically making the soundtrack to Interstellar.
Mm.
It's absolutely amazing, and he was kind of using string instruments. But like the further away in the film they got from Earth, the more they started to use those very acoustic kind of wooden, earthly made instruments in a weird way. So they would turn the bow upside down.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, play the strings, but with the upside of the bow, which I think is quite cool. So I think
it's a great way to interpret that kind of, it's familiar, but
not.
Yeah.
And then kind of like distorted.
Yeah.
So I feel like I think if you've got a piano, there's really cool things you can do with it, you know.
Well, yeah, you've got a mic and a great setup as well for that. So, you know.
Exactly.
Prepared piano kind of.
Precisely. Mm. Indeed.
Love it.
We love to see it.
Any particular colour on the Steinway? Go for it.
I think black. No,
just
black.
Yeah,
classic.
Yeah, classic, yeah.
Piano
classic.
Black.
Classic, yeah.
Any particular variety, like just the classic Steinway D that you get in every concert hall sort of thing, or something a bit more?
I would say so. You're testing my knowledge of Steinway paper grand pianos. But yes, I think
we're testing Will's, isn't it? The D or the...
I believe there are others.
Other Steinways are available.
Other Steinways are available, yeah. I was also trying to remember, if we just go back to guitar pedals.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember the name of the pedal that I a pedal that I use sometimes, which is Chase Bliss Audio, and it's Mood. Mm. Chase Bliss Audio is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Mood is really cool.
I don't know this.
It's a micro granular sampler.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I have it. It's so
it's
cool.
It's so cool, right? Exactly. I was like trying to think, you know, when you use stuff, and I haven't actually used it in
a
while.
And is this a physical pedal? Or
it's a physical pedal,
Yeah. And all of their pedals are really cool. And I also love, they've got this really cool way of sort of promoting them, which is really, like, they do really great videos.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just fun.
Item number 5.
Okay, we're getting down to the wire here. I am aware that I haven't got any monitors, but I'm going to make a radical decision and say that in my dream fictional studio.
Mm-hmm. Fantasy studio.
Fantasy, not fictional.
So not fictional, I do apologise. Fantasy. Fantasy studio. Monitors would be unnecessary.
Okay.
They would be unnecessary because in this fantasy studio, you would feel the music.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say I would never finish any music.
Say more.
You would feel, because I feel like the last two items I really need. So I'm going to forego some monitors.
So it's nonsense just to get out.
Oh,
so
no,
you can
it's complete rubbish.
Wow, this has been an incredible technological breakthrough I'm not aware of.
We all have microchips in our brains and we can hear things.
Oh, you've got a Neuralink into your brain.
Exactly.
Oh,
so what's actually happening is you're listening to this music out of the speakers of your laptop.
Yeah.
No, but yes.
No.
Yes. No, yes, yeah. But it's just sad because I don't... monitors are very... mean this in the nicest possible way. Like, the least interesting when it comes to wanting to have gear.
Yes.
It's a necessity, but a dull one.
We gave you 3 uninteresting items for free. This one you will have to suffer.
No. it's just difficult.
You don't need them, though. You can forego them if you want. If you want to use your laptop speakers...
I don't want to. It's just... Okay, do you know what? Let's do number 5 and let's decide at the end.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so number... item number 5 would be Outputs Arcade. Is that allowed?
Yeah, is it one thing? You think it's a bundle?
Yes, it's allowed.
I don't keep up with bundle technology. I don't know how many bundles are going.
You swore off bundles when we started this podcast.
Yeah, that was it.
It's not a bundle. It isn't a bundle, though. It's one single...
It is a subscription instrument.
Indeed. Singular.
They should make all the instruments subscribable. Like guitars and things.
Yeah. Put me off doing anything ever.
Yeah, if you want to play guitar, it's going to cost you £250,000 over your life.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think choosing music is probably that part of most people. Okay. Fine.
Allowed?
Yeah.
Yes.
Allowed. Permitted. So tell us about it, why you love it.
Okay.
Because it's relatively recent, right? Probably five years.
Relatively, yeah. I think it's just, for me, I'm very much like vibe-led. That sounds really like, I'm very much like into the vibe.
Your studio's not in LA, right?
Yeah, literally, I know. But I feel like I kind of really like weird sounds and I'm not afraid of kind of creating, I will happily wait an hour. Even more, until I have kind of like, even just like 4 bars of something that, even if it might be weird, makes me feel something and it's exciting to write on. Mm-hmm. So I could literally just have.
And can that be non-musical? It can be, as in like, it could be just like candy or percussive.
Sometimes it'll just be like a percussive sound that just kind of, I'm like instantly, I feel something, or a really weird, interesting weird sounds that I can mess up. I love having something like a raw thing that I can then think, okay, I can do this, I can do that, I can completely alter it, change its like identity. And so Output, I think, is so cool because sometimes I will literally just have like a bass line and then I open up Output and just see what happens and just see what feels cool.
Am I wrong that this is the... has lots of vocally kind of
Yeah, but
notes.
Not only vocally stuff. Sometimes it has really weird sounds or it has maybe just like a weird kind of like
But there's
piano,
a lot of
glissando,
this instrument on
like,
modern pop music, right? Not just via over 500 million streams, but... No, but generally in modern pop there is...
There's quite a lot. But I just kind of think it's really cool because there's just... sometimes. So there's one track that I did that's not out yet. Mm-hmm. That I basically built
501 million streams.
Think higher.
No, I mean on release day.
60 million streams.
Billion streams.
1 billion
That's
streams.
An extra million streams on your new release. That's all right.
Huh?
A million streams on a new release.
You want a few more than that.
I want a few more.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gunning for more. Yeah. So there's one song that I basically built. Instead of like building chords, I basically opened up output and I was kind of like this. I think it was like it was one of the vocal ones, and I just basically built chords with it. And it was like that was like the under mm-hmm, yeah. like the underbelly of the chord. And I kind of just built it literally through sounds, and so I built a chord through output, if that makes
by
sense.
By layering.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
By layering.
Okay. Yeah.
And I just feel like there's so much you can do with it that's really interesting. So it makes me approach writing and approaching building a track in a different way, instead of just being like, okay, so I've got my keyboard now and I have a sit like, yeah. And I feel like as a piano player, it's very easy to sort of see chords just linear. Chords like this way, if that makes sense, horizontally. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of one reason why I sometimes like using the push, because it makes you see chords in a completely different, from a different angle, if that makes sense.
It's the same when you pick, if you pick up a guitar compared to
exactly. Like, it kind of forces you to use different inversions of chords and stuff,
and jump to different notes, whereas something that might seem like the wrong sort of memory to
exactly.
go here.
Especially
things like jumping octaves. I've always found that different. Like, it feels like, I don't know, it feels like I'm doing a big maneuver on a keyboard and octave, whereas on a guitar it's like
physically it is a much bigger maneuver, isn't it, than a guitar.
I don't know, especially when writing melodies and bass lines, that kind of, it's different.
Yeah,
it is different. Yeah. It completely changes your approach to like how you would voice a chord, or, you know, and so that's, I really love output for that. And then also just afterwards for just like cool, like little weird things that you can just, I like weird stuff. I feel like some of the best tracks that you listen to and you're like, it has a personality and an identity. Mm. And from like the first second, you're like, I know what that song is.
Well, it's like it's a brave noise, isn't it?
Like Bon Iver. I love Bon Iver, and I love his approach to production. It's just so, and James Blake, I found out he was like in the same uni as me, but like in the last year. So he was in his last year, as I was in my first year. And I was like, God damn it. If only I'd known. I think you can hear someone's brain, if that makes sense, in their approach to production sometimes. Yeah. And I think it's a really interesting out-of-the-box way of thinking.
Mm. And so within the structure of the track, you're talking about sort of creating those unusual auditory moments.
Is that
something you want to try and hook people with as quickly as possible when they're listening to it?
Yes, I think so.
That's critical in pop, isn't it? Like within the first few seconds, I know it's that record.
Like, also, I kind of feel like those things, I don't get so inspired by just straight chords, if that makes sense. I like to kind of have, if within like the first bar or first four bars, there's something quite interesting that even if it's a texture.
Yeah. Or like Foley type element, something.
Yeah, exactly. That then can kind of create an emotion or make me feel something. Then I'm much more inspired to write on it. Mm. And also I really like creating space as well. Mm. So sometimes like if there's kind of rhythmic space in something, then it kind of allows me to think through it as opposed to like on top of something. So if chords are like this, then I'm thinking on top of it. But if I'm creating rhythmic space, then I can think through it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Snaky melodies.
Snaky melodies.
Snaky melodies.
Precisely. Hey. Yeah, then I'm more likely to weave something through it.
Yeah.
And then those elements are feeling like they're kind of intertwined, and that's just as much a part of the top line as the top line is, if that makes sense, and vice versa. The top line's just as much part of the track as the top line.
And just thinking about it from the perspective of being a vocalist who also plays violin, how important is it to think about parts being melodic in themselves?
Really important.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So like I kind of feel I think interestingly, like my background in orchestras has helped that because I kind of, you get to understand each section, even within each violin section, you know, you have violin one, violin two, and you have kind of each section is there to serve the other, but each section has its own melody as well. It's not just, apart from God, poor violas, they're often just the alto of the entire orchestra. But even altos, there's still melody in there, melody. Sure. And so I think for me, I always try to do that in production, that there's a melody throughout. And I feel like some of the best music does that. Like if you think of Michael Jackson, or if you think of like Coldplay, for example. So people don't like, maybe some people are team Coldplay, some people team up. But I feel like their productions...
I think most people are team Coldplay.
I love Coldplay.
I think people use them as a thing, and now everybody's team Coldplay.
Is it just
I think it was just a thing.
Because I love Coldplay. I think they're amazing. And like every single one of their tracks has a melody within the instrumentation. And I think it's like, I love
most big dance artists as well, kind of attest a lot to Coldplay. It's that anthemic festival.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's important because then often you'll get inspired through a melody. And like if there's a top line, in a piano line, if there's a beautiful like melody, then that will inspire the melody for the vocal. So yeah, it's important to me.
Yeah.
I always try to do that. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. And now, in bass lines too.
We get to the tense last item.
Okay.
What's in between?
Okay, I'll tell you what it's between.
Between some monitors and...
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah. Yeah, it's basically between NS10s, because they never lie to you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it hurts while you're using them, but you're always grateful you did. Or...
Like an audio gym.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's so true. That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. Or like... getting ready without makeup, and then it's like the final thing you put on, and you're like,
oh yeah,
the outfit looks great, as you would both know.
Yes.
Or sound toys, Echo Boy.
Because
I feel like I haven't.
I don't know how that's a hard decision. Hearing all of your music forever through laptop speakers,
okay, fine,
or an Echo plugin. I mean, you've got Echo plugins in Logic,
no,
right?
No, because you. I know it's not the same.
Okay,
and also the other thing.
But you're saying that the speakers and the laptop are the same.
In my defense, sound toys I use every single day, and
your monitors, I'm sure.
But I need that. They needed to be at least a shout out to Sound Toys, because I use them every single day, and it's the one kind of plugin software that I use that I would not be able to live without. If I didn't have it on my laptop, my music would not be the same.
Well, okay, and
so it's difficult. That's where FabFilter 2. You know, it's like you either go with pragmatism or you go with the heart. Because how can you live without FabFilter's EQ?
How can you live without monitors, though?
It's not
music
the same.
Would be so not fun.
We have had people who have chosen not to have monitors before, and I think they just found a pair of earbuds in a drawer somewhere.
Okay.
It was a bit of a... I think I know which direction you're going, Rafael. Okay. I think we know.
I suppose
the
earbud thing does, like, and a lot of people do end up listening to music on earbuds anyway, so yeah.
So
the thing is, if this is true fantasy,
you must be upselling dreams with me here.
Well, look, okay, I've softened on this. I feel sound toys.
Yeah,
tell us about what you're using Echo Boy for specifically. Why can't you be without it?
Because I think that. There's like, I always like to call it like sauce that you can't, oh gosh, that was the chair.
Chris was just started singing there.
It's like being 13 all over again. It's happening.
Can you imagine?
Another octave? Now? In my 40s? When will it end?
So I kind of feel like it's such an all-rounder. And I like to add sauce. There's like to add kind of a feeling. And obviously there's a time and a place for things to be dry. But if I was to never be able to have Sound Toys sauce on my records forever and ever and ever, I would be sad. And I feel like there's a lot of stuff you can do with it that's really creative, and you can kind of create loops and loops and loops and loops and loops of delays and delays and delays and delays that you can kind of then create.
And are you using this on vocals, on anything?
On everything, literally everything. So I like to use it on, and I'm thinking, because I know I'm quite aware, I don't have any kind of drum / percussion plugin here.
Got Logic again though, so.
Yeah, that's true. So I was thinking it could be cool if I'm kind of like recording percussive sounds through the mic. And I just think...
You've got your piano as well?
Well, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. I mean, obviously, we're going for more like an analog vibe here. It's not we're not going to be necessarily creating dance records. It's like, baby, yeah. I just think that there's like, I am just obsessed with its spice and how I can, I just add it to a lot, to basically everything. Vocals, I can create just like really nice atmosphere. I think atmosphere is like really important to me.
And it's specifically and it's the Echo Boy, right?
So tell us
or
about
crystallizer.
Or crystallizer. You've got to have one though. You've got to choose one.
Echo Boy.
Okay. But crystallizer for...
Crystallizer is really creative. Mm. So that's kind of like for specifically like backing vocals or like... So what I like to do is I often don't do... I know the traditional
What's the nature of crystallizer?
It's kind of...
Oh, it's like a pitch shift.
Yeah, okay. And it's also with delay. It's quite delayed. Yeah. You've got delays in it and the kind of
like a pitch delay
stuff.
Then, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, like, what I like to do is often I know like the formulaic thing is to have two or four doubles with backing vocals, but what I often quite like to do is just to have one and to put it through a number of different things. Like, I know this is not on my list, but I just shout out to Microshift. I kind of like to widen stuff. So instead of having like two either side stereo, like left, right, or four, I like to have one that I kind of process and make sound really interesting, and then it can weave through things. And I just think that what it does overall is more interesting to me than having a more kind of formulaic left and right backing vocal. And I grew up listening to Brandy and the way she kind of weaves her vocal, her backing vocals. It's more of like I like to call them harmony ad libs. So if you've got like a lead line and then you've got even just like let's say a third underneath, or a third above, I like to then find one of the thirds that I've not hit and kind of weave the melody through. And if you have just one line doing that, but you widen it, then it just creates a really cool feel. I did it on MK's 2AM. So you have like the pre-chorus, it's love enough. And then I go, love enough. So, and you kind of, I just find stuff through it. And I just think it's a really much cooler way to process that kind of backing vocal than if I was to do it in a traditional love is love enough, which is fine, but not as interesting
as weaving
through, if that makes sense. And then having one that you then process and
it was immediately more interesting when you just did it there.
And then it kind of has more of a character as well. It's quite like, it's more brave in a way. It's like, I am what I am.
And strangely, it sounds sort of more natural.
Yeah.
Even though it's...
Like,
against the rules, it just sounds like somebody singing rather than thinking of where to hit.
Yeah, so I kind of like instinctively know where the harmony is. I'm weird. I just sing harmonies. I don't necessarily think about it. And then it's interesting to find those little passing notes. And I did like, obviously, growing up, do Bach chorales and stuff. And there's all the counterpoint and there's lots of different like passing notes. And you kind of like, so maybe that's where it's come from. But I just like to do that. And you just create moments through things. So, And I think Echo Boy really helps to create that vibe.
Are there specific settings you're using for like, do you prefer to use a number of different delays, for instance? Are you using like 16ths, 8ths, like what?
Yeah, so I kind of, it really depends. I just literally follow my ears. So it'll be different every single time.
Do you use multiple?
Yes, I use multiple. So and I like to pan them. So sometimes like one will be like an eighth will be panned left and 16th will be panned right, ever so slightly. So you're getting kind of like... a nice little stereo, interesting.
Width.
Cool, yeah. Love that.
And without it being just like a hard.
And I always like to EQ them too, get rid of the lows, cut that out, so then there's space. So But it all depends. I just literally follow my ears. And that's like why I find sound toys so fun. Because I never really, I know like roughly, I know what I want to hear. But some, it all depends on like what that backing vocal is doing or what that vocal specifically in that track is doing. And I just literally follow my ears and experiment.
I think at this point, it's time for Will to take us on the journey of the studio you've just built. Oh, so have a listen back here.
With no monitors.
And yeah, while we're listening back to this, have a think about what you want as your luxury item, which is not a piece of gear.
Okay, so is this... Okay, fine.
That's
right, cool.
Okay, so have a listen, right? Okay. What have we got, Will? What have we built?
We're in a studio in a free Esfahan, surrounded by nature with a Persian carpet from Stockbridge and a samovar... coffee machine, fairy lights, indoor plants.
Indeed.
Your free items, you've chosen a MacBook Pro M3 Max, a UA Apollo Twin, and Logic Pro X. Then for your six items, you have chosen to steal egg whites, Neumann U47.
Indeed, sorry.
You have a TubeTech CL1B compressor, a Sequential Prophet 6, a Steinway D grand piano, Output Arcade, and for your final item, a plug-in, you have chosen Soundtoy's Echo Boy. Can you make music with that?
Yes, I can.
Love it. Can you do everything you want to do with it?
No, not everything.
Okay, what are you kind of missing? What do you feel like the bits you wish you could have in there?
Some speakers.
some speakers.
Okay, yeah, good point.
Yeah, some speakers. And then I guess, like, I really would... basically all of Soundtoys.
Okay.
Everything they make. Fab filter.
So you would have had the bundle.
I would have had the bundle. I would have had the bundle. Okay. I would have had Korg
bundle.
As well. Korg bundle. So you've got like...
You can
like,
see why we don't do bundles, right?
Yeah.
It does make it challenging.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
It's just really sad. Oh my
gosh. We should have a special Christmas bundle edition where you can only pick bundles.
Only bundles.
Yeah.
It'd be a short show.
And then also, actually, I have to say, like, Fab Filters Pro R... is really great. Their reverb is an unsung hero, in my opinion. I really like, I love their reverb. And also, like, a really good, I love, like, auto-tune a lot. I know you've got the built-in Logic one, but Antares is
the original.
10 out of 10. Yeah.
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 Well, then that's just...
a Melodyne.
Anything else? Anything else to add there?
Battery.
Yeah.
And let's finish this up with the luxury item, though, which isn't a piece of gear.
Can it be a luxury built-in thing?
Maybe.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking a built-in cafe that sells Persian food all through
the
day.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
For our audience, what we have in breakfast, lunch and dinner from this Persian cafe.
Of course, yeah, of course.
No, but so, tell us the dishes.
Oh, okay, fine. Oh, sorry. Okay, so basically...
Yes.
All of it.
All of it, please.
All three meals.
Okay, so for
Will, take it.
So for breakfast, obviously Persian chai. Uh-huh. My favourite is called chai nabat, which is like this crystallised sugar that you put into it. Not very healthy, but we love it. It's like, it's basically a Persian's cure to every single ill. Whether you have a broken heart, a broken leg, a cold, literally anything. It's like chai nabat would fix it. It's basically raising your blood sugar levels and you feel good.
Yeah.
That's long story.
Works.
And then tokhme gorje, which is like, my baba makes the best. It's like scrambled eggs, but with like tomato, with Persian tomato puree kind of mixed in. So you cook down your tomatoes first and then you scramble your eggs into it. And it's just scrambled eggs on steroids. It's amazing.
Nice.
For breakfast. Lunch. I think we're going to go for kubide kebab, which is like a minced meat, minced lamb.
Yeah.
And it's a kebab, so you get 10 out of 10 with buttery saffron rice.
Wow.
For lunch.
Nice.
And then for dinner, if we're not exhausted and in a food coma, probably qayma bademjoon, which is like a traditional Persian stew made with like lentils, tomato, turmeric, saffron, and lamb.
Perfect. I'm starving.
Yeah, I'm absolutely famished.
That's why I went in.
Come over anytime.
Well, thank you so much, Rafaela, for coming on
thank
the podcast
you for having
and
me.
Building your dream forever studio with us. We've had a great time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's been My Forever Studio with Rafaela. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time for another adventure into Studio Foreverdom. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.